Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week, a special conversation with the former governor of California, Jerry Brown. He, of course, is the longest serving governor in the history of the state, a four-term governor of California, also had served as Secretary of State, Attorney General, Mayor of Oakland. He's run for president three times. His father was governor twice. There is nobody in the history of the state quite like him. He comes to us this week in the midst of the Democratic National Convention. Me personally, I interviewed Jerry Brown for the first time during the last Democratic convention. That was in 2016 in Philadelphia. It was crazy and crowded with thousands of people all around us. I remember interviewing him and looking over a stage of about 20,000 people behind us. This time, nothing like that. He's via Skype from his ranch in Colusa County, nobody around. It's a very different time. It's a different political universe. Jerry Brown has been through a lot. We talk about this week's Democratic convention, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris's history-making moment this week. We also talk about California's dealing with the coronavirus, AB 5, which is a big bill, power, climate change, the issue that is, of course, the cause of Jerry Brown's life. It's an interesting conversation. He's always candid, always has been over 50 years, but now that he's out of office, he's even more candid and incredibly honest and insightful. And even if you disagree with him, Jerry Brown is a very interesting person to listen to talk. This conversation was originally supposed to be about 10 minutes. It went a lot longer than that. And at the end of it, he said, I still have more to say. And we had to wrap things up for time purposes. But we look forward to hopefully another conversation with him soon. So here is the 34th and 39th governor of California, Jerry Brown. Governor Brown, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Great to be here. Great to be with you.
All right. So let's talk about this week. We saw the Democratic convention virtually. You've been to so many conventions over the years in person. What do you make of this whole virtual experience? Does it work for you?
Well, yeah, it works. In fact, you can hear the speeches a little better, and you hear the content, the expression, without all the atmospherics, plotting, the hijinks, and all the rest. So, at one level, you get the flow of the information, the speech, what the men and women are saying. Of course, you miss all the excitement of what a convention really is. So. There you have it, both sides.
What do you make of the content itself? Some say there's a lot of identity politics, not a lot of policy specifics, a lot of biography stuff. What do you make of the content?
Well, you know, these issues that we have, whether it's fixing or improving the medical system or readjusting our relations with Russia and China, the economy, the Federal Reserve, this stuff is really complicated. So campaigns usually are at a very general level. John Kennedy ran. I was there in 1960. He said, get America moving again. Ronald Reagan ran an advertising campaign that emphasized it's morning in America. So it's general. That's all you're getting. And what you get from Biden and Harris, it's experience. It's integrity. It's decency. It's more plain folks. That's the message. Trump is more exotic. He's not like anything we've ever seen before. And I think what they're trying to project is that Biden and Harris represent more of the real America, more of America than they're saying Trump. Now, we know Trump represents 40% of America. Now, the big battle is for the next 10% between 40 and 50, or maybe 40 and 47. And they're basically trying to appeal, yes, to specific groups, African-Americans, Hispanic, certainly women, LGBT. But at the same time, they want to appeal to working men, white men. They're going to determine the swing vote in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. That's how Hillary lost, not because of the intellectuals, not because of African-Americans, but because working class men felt that Hillary was that was a direction they didn't want to go in. Not by very much. It was very close. So I think this convention is attempting to reach out to that group that will decide the election, but not lose in any way the enthusiasm of the base voter.
You and Joe Biden started in politics right around the same time, within a couple years of each other. You both have been doing this for 5 decades plus now. Tell us about Joe Biden, the man that you know.
Well, first of all, he is what you see, what you get. You get when you see. He's a person that's been around like me, but I can tell you, he's had a lot of experience. He's not flamboyant. He's not a show horse. He's a workhorse. He has all the decency that Americans want. He's been close to working people. He's had tragedy in his life. He worked with Obama as vice president. He's been in that Senate for decades. So, look, it's almost like when I ran against Meg Whitman, who incidentally is for Biden, you got to know stuff. Not knowing is not good. Biden knows. He knows how to get it done. And if you like the turbulence of Trump and what all that is, Biden's not your guy. But if you feel that we got to stabilize, get back to a more traditional American way of doing the presidency, I think Biden's your guy. And I've known him for decades, and he's not on the far end of anything. He's right in the center of the Democratic Party and American politics.
Joe Biden is around the same age that you were in 2016. Any regrets about not running then?
Well, you know, Hillary's running. It took someone like Bernie Sanders to really, burn it down. You had to attack in a frontal assault the establishment. And I went against Bill once. I wasn't really up for it. And tell you the truth, I was doing well as governor. We were managing the budget. We were doing a rainy day fund, getting water handled. So I thought, I was elected to one job. I was going to do it. I tried that business of being in office and running again, running while I'm in office. I did that in 1980, and I don't think the voters liked it. So I wasn't ready for a fourth try in the middle of my term. Had I finished my term, I might have given a lot of consideration.
Do you think Joe Biden is too old to be president?
No, I don't think I'm too old to be president. I'm 82. I'm 5 years older than him. I feel I'm at the peak of my understanding and experience. Remember, this is energy is good. And being young and not knowing everything or not knowing even a lot, you're bolder. You'll take risks. You'll innovate. But as you get older, you understand things. You've made your mistakes, so you're much wiser. And I think at this point, with all the dangers in the world, climate change, the virus, the growing competition with the nuclear powers, China and Russia, I think we need wisdom. We need experience. And that's where Biden's age at 78. I've learned a hell of a lot in the last 4 years. So, yeah, 82 is fine, depending upon what your health is. And Biden looks pretty good. He's got at least 4 years in him, maybe more. Who knows?
Kamala Harris is a whole lot.
I can just tell you this. Right now, at my age, my thought processes, my memory, my sizing up of situations and people, I think I am better prepared now to be governor than ever before. Certainly when I ran in 74, and I'd say even when I ran back in 2014.
So that, again, if all that's true, any regrets about not running for president this time?
Mild, but I don't think no, Bernie was too strong. They had a bunch of good people running. I wasn't ready to jump out and do that. No, I think it's time to let some other people do it. And I don't think I would have won anyway. If I thought I could have won, yeah, I might well have jumped in. But that was my mature sizing up of the situation. Don't run. That's the way it is.
Well, Kamala Harris, of course, did run for president. Now she's running for vice president. She is the first Californian Democrat on the ticket ever. What do you make of that moment for California and of her, somebody you've worked with closely over the years?
Well, I'd frame it in the historical context. Richard Nixon, as a very young senator, after 2 years, he was picked to run with Dwight Eisenhower, delivering the California delegation, or so he claimed. which turned out not to be exactly true. But that did a lot for California, and he certainly was a consequential figure in American politics. Kamala Harris has certainly the background in Nixon. In some ways, she's has more experience. So I think it's a big impact as a woman, someone of Asian and African ultimate descent. That's breaking a barrier, and it's part of the newness. Joe is representing America, the tradition, and Kamala is certainly by no means on the radical side, but she is closer in touch with the America that is emerging, both through people of color, through the power of women. And so I think it's a pretty darn good balance. And I think it'll be good for California, but I think it's good for America and America's position in the world. I think sending Kamala Harris to Beijing and Moscow and other places, maybe, you know, Iran, whatever. I don't know how they receive her in Iran. They like to keep women all veiled up. But I think she could be a real instrument in the revitalization of American policy. And I think with Joe at the helm and her right there, I think it's a very unusual team and one that will be good for America and secondarily good for California.
Let's talk about some of the issues as well with Governor Jerry Brown. Governor, the issue, of course, you are probably most passionate about right now is climate change. And in the last week in California, we've seen it 130 degrees in Death Valley. We see fires up and down the state. And we see a major energy crisis with rolling blackouts, people losing power. What do you say to Californians that are saying, how does this happen in this big of an economy that we can't even keep the lights on for people?
Well, they kept them on. Mary, you're talking about a couple of hours for a very limited number of people. And by the way, this is a balancing act. If you want to build a bunch of plants and just keep them in reserve and use them for 5 hours a year or 10 hours every couple of years, that's a hell of an expense. And that goes right on your bill. So people have to pay for that. And if they knew it and they said the risk might be you might lose power for a few hours, they might take it. But this power outage, you know, as we look into it, somebody probably screwed up because the next day things got worse and we didn't have a blackout because they can manage it. They knew. And the independent system operator who managed this whole thing should have given the governor and the PUC and other people time. But that's not the main point. The main point is climate is getting warmer. It's changing. And the fires are, I've seen the scientific reports. We're going to have more of this. This is just a little taste of what's coming. And as I look out my window right now, it's full of smoke. The fire is probably 30, 40 miles away, but it's coming. And it's going to get hot, and we're going to get extreme flooding, thunderstorms. The lightning was unprecedented. And we get fire tornadoes. Look, this climate change is not a liberal little fantasy, a little toy for eco freaks and environmentalists. This is scientific reality. And it's here. It's going to affect California and America and the rest of the world. It's going to affect China. So they better stop building coal, because when the Himalayas stop their snow melts, you're going to have a few floods, and they're going to be short of water. And so wherever you are in the world, we have to pull together. And this climate change, like the virus, ought to be something that brings us together, because we're all facing the same thing, whether you're a communist, whether you're a follower of Putin, or whether you're a North Korean or an Iranian, we're all in the same boat on planet Earth. And we have the nuclear threat that could end humanity in a matter of days. We have the climate, which we're talking about. And then we have the coronavirus. And that's just the first one. We're going to have more viruses because we have more people contacting more animals that were never contacted before. And we're going to pay the piper. So, yeah, don't worry about a few hours of your lights. This is going to cost money. We're going to have lifestyle change. And instead of spending a lot of the money that we are on massive new nuclear bombs, we're going to have to invent better cars, hydrogen cars, hydrogen fuel. We're going to have so many things. We have a call to arms here. Wake up. And these fires are not finished yet. They're burning. And they're going to keep burning. And you know what? In the next 5 years, it's going to be worse. And you're going to have more nights when you're going to wonder when the blackout is. So the answer is not like some right-wing people have said, oh, get rid of your solar and your wind. No, we have to get to zero carbon emissions in our electrical power and our cars and all the rest of the society. And we only have till 2045, 2050 to do it. We need, and the word is appropriate, radical change in the way things are going on. And I don't hear any of the politicians saying that, but I thought I'd just let you Fox News people know we're in for a rough ride. So fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be rough.
And of course, our show, the issue is not only airing on Fox stations, but airing on different stations all around the state, including ABC, CBS, NBC as well. So we're appreciative.
Well, good.
And speak to everybody.
Yes. I'll tell you, you're not going to hear this anywhere else.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you the way it is.
That's why
we don't have to.
That's why we like having you here on the issue as governor. And your thoughts on a couple other hot topics in the state this week. AB 5, this bill has become a hot debate. Uber and Lyft are arguing that their employees should not be classified the way that the state is classifying them, threatening to leave the state. What do you make of where that is at? And do you think that AB 5 is working out?
Well, AB 5 is pretty far reaching, and I can't tell you all the details. But anytime you make that kind of a big shift, you have consequences. So Lyft and Uber, they have this ballot measure. They're going to fight that out, and we're going to hear all the arguments and plenty of time to talk. But all I can say is be skeptical. Being an employee gives you Social Security, workers' comp, and benefits, and you got to treat your workers right. And the new economy, with Uber and the other kinds of gig businesses, they give you flexibility. And a lot of people like getting in their Lyft or Uber, and the price and the availability. So, look, like everything in politics, it's going to take some compromising, and we'll see. I'll be able to have more to say about it. I'd like to look at it more. My friends in labor, they feel they got Uber and Lyft where they want them. And Uber and Lyft say, well, not so fast. We're putting on the ballot. They'll probably spend $100 million, and everyone in California will have a chance to weigh in.
Let's talk about the other biggest issue recently, which is, of course, the coronavirus. Last time you were here, we talked about your role on the task force advising Governor Newsom. You working with the other governors. Since we last spoke, we spoke with Governor Schwarzenegger, and he told us this.
I think that he opened up businesses maybe quicker than we should have, because then it backfired and the coronavirus came right back like gangbusters. And now I think that we've learned from that and that we have to pull back.
Do you agree with that?
Well, obviously, we opened it too soon because the virus expanded. But I have to say, as a governor, this thing, it's complicated. People are yelling and screaming, we got to work, we got to get to school, we got to get to our jobs. You have millions of people who, without the money, can't make it, can't feed their families. So the governor had a tough decision to make. Things looked better. And as it turned out, he had to pull back. But let me tell you what the problem is. The problem is that we need a president in February, at least now, but then to have mobilized manufacturing so we could have had millions of tests a day and get the result back that afternoon or that evening. We had to do that so we could identify what was the subset, the group that was infected, and then quarantine them. Because without those tests, you quarantine everybody. And that becomes intolerable and will lead to a depression. So the failure on the president has led to the fix that Newsom and California find themselves in. Then secondly, you have all these people, the so-called essential workers, that they're the ones that are getting it in nursing homes, at Walmart, and these other places. Well, the federal government ought to give these people a stipend and pay them to stay home. For the first few, we should have closed down completely for 4 months and the federal government pay the difference. Then we could have gotten over it. But We didn't have the quarantine. We didn't pay the low-paid workers, and we don't have the testing. We don't have the testing today. And how can America claim to be this superpower in the world when we can't make the tests and get them back in time? Because if you take a test and you get the results in a week, then you can infect dozens of people in the meantime. So we're in a pickle. It was caused by Trump. I know I'm a Democrat, but I'm telling you the honest truth. Now, Newsom has to do the best he can, but it's not so easy.
And of course, many European countries actually did pay people to stay home, and they have had better results as a result of that. What do you make, though, of Governor Newsom's leadership here? And is there anything that you may have done differently if you were in charge?
Well, I might have tried to figure out, could we get more of that testing? I don't think the state can be the one to pay all the people, millions of people. I think he's been putting a lot of time into it. In some ways, this is not, well, you certainly can't manage this without problems. And I've looked at it myself. What would I do? And I really couldn't tell you that I could have done something different or better. We're just like this fire. It's very hard to fight. The virus, very hard to difficulty, very hard to manage, because you got people yelling at people if they wear a mask. They throw punches. They have protests. So the mask, which is very good, very important to reduce the virus, has become a political symbol for those on the right, a small group, millions of people. They say, this is Trump. We're right. You're wrong. You're a bunch of left-wing kooks. And how can you manage when the most essential remedy, having a covering on your mouth, is something that is political? So our problem, Newsom's problem, is America's problem. We're too polarized. We don't believe any people who are our leaders, the authorities, and you can't run a country that way. So I hope Joe, in his down-to-earth way, can restore a sense of not only decency, but belief and confidence, so we can get back to just the common sense things, rather than, are you red? Are you blue? Are you Trump? Are you Biden? I mean, that's not the way you can run America. And so Newsom has been dealt a very tough hand. I had a good hand for 8 years. Everything went fine, and I got out of town, turned the lights off, and headed to the ranch. Now I'm looking, and I'm not going to, throw any oil under the fire.
Is that last time we talked, you were part of this task force, you and the other governors advising the governor. Is that still happening? How regularly do you guys talk? What's going on with that?
Well, we talk, or rather we listen, and there are subgroups that assist the governor. But basically, this is the government's got to do this stuff. It's local public health, local communities, and the state. Through all the various agencies of the state government. Now, getting business on board and getting them to mirror the government policies and carry them out, that's good. And I think Governor Newsom has achieved that.
And just lastly, to wrap things up, to finish off where we started, which is talking about the election itself. 2021 in California. What does that look like if Joe Biden is president? And what does that look like if Donald Trump is president?
Well, no matter who's president, we have a big challenge, because we've been spending all this money. We have a lot of unemployment. We have a lot of businesses that went out of business and not coming back. So we got a big problem. Now, if we have Trump, I think we have more polarization. You have a lot of deep discontent on the part of a lot of people. And I think that's going to be very hard to manage. And his thing on climate change, he is going to, his policies are going to contribute to what we're seeing now, all these damn fires. And that's unacceptable. If there was anything else, well, I think too, the virus, and hopefully that'll be handled by January, but the fires and climate change, and this, that's the biggie. Although I think he could get us into war. And I am worried about that. If we get Biden, it's not going to be miracles. It's not going to be some utopia. But we're going to have an ordinary, normal person of above average intelligence, of calmness, deliberation, who can work with Republicans. That's why he's getting endorsed by all these Republicans and Democrats. And he understands the people who protest, and even the ones who throw bombs and burn things down. But he, that's not him. You'll see a lot of ads from Trump saying Biden's some kind of radical protester. He's not. If anything, you know, he's more, he's to the center. There's no question. But I think his empathy, his skill, his 50 years in this business, you learn how to do stuff. You learn how to talk to your adversaries, your so-called allies, the radicals on the fringe. I think if anybody can handle the job of being president, I think Biden can at this time. Having said all that, with Biden, it's going to be still extremely difficult. With Trump, Katie bar the door. It'll be a disaster.
Well, on that note, in 50 years of doing this, you also learn how to do TV interviews pretty well. And Governor, I really
Thank
do
you.
Appreciate your time and your insight. You always had candor throughout, but I love how especially how much candor you have now, too. And we
Thank
appreciate
you.
The fact that you tell it like it is. And we know that you are telling your truth. So we appreciate hearing
That's
your perspective.
That's the way I see it. Call on me again, because I haven't finished telling you all that I know.
All right. We open invitation. Governor Jerry Brown, one of the most important Californians ever, to join us here on The Issue Is.
Our thanks to Governor Brown. Next week, we'll have special coverage of the Republican National Convention. Look forward to that. Thanks so much for listening to The Issue Is. I hope you'll connect with me in social media at Alex Michelson. Subscribe to this podcast, like this podcast, share this podcast with friends. Let people know about the show that we're trying to do. We're sort of a little engine that could, and any help we can get from you is very appreciated. I'm Alex Michelson. Have a great week.